it is gone! A two-run home run for Rhys Hoskins into the second deck for Bryce Harper. Wait a miss, he got him! And Aaron Nola leads two. Segura on the run, reaches up and makes the grab!
Swing and a miss, struck him out!
Now batting for the Phillies, John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome back to another edition of Hittin' Season. This is episode number 315. I'm John Stolness from SB Nation's Phillies blog, The Good Fight. You can follow me on Twitter at John Stolness. Coming up, we're going to talk about the Phillies-Mets series that just wrapped up here on Sunday Night Baseball. The Phillies tried to give one away here on Sunday night, but they managed to pull it out and take the final game of the three-game series, and we'll tell you where that leaves them in the wild card standing. Some interesting decisions by Gabe Kapler we're going to talk about in this one. Joe West fell down and had trouble getting back up, so that was entertaining, and luckily, you know, he's fine and all that. But we'll talk about Corey Dickerson and why this team reminds me of a team that most of you probably have never seen before, but I think the parallels are pretty similar. And we're going to look ahead at the September schedule, and if you're wondering why the Phillies playoff odds are so low, all you got to do is look at the schedule. It's pretty awful. And joining me, as she does every Sunday night, is one of the best sports writers in the country, Liz Rocher from Yahoo Sports. You can follow her on Twitter at Liz Rocher. Liz, hi. How you doing? How was your weekend?
My weekend was good, John. Thank you for such a kind introduction.
Well, sure. I meant every word. And Justin will not be along tonight. Justin is taking care of some other business, and he's enjoying a nice, much-needed weekend away. So we'll hopefully have Justin on with us again next weekend. But for the next little while, it'll just be me and Liz talking about this baseball team, which, Liz, we keep watching. They keep putting them on TV, and we keep watching them. And I guess it's because they are technically still in a wild card race. And that tells you really about the state of the National League right now, Liz. This wild card race is, especially for the second wild card, is pretty awful. The Nationals are going to run away with the top wild card. They are really, really good. But it's the Cubs and the Phillies and the Mets, I guess, battling it out for this second wild card. And our friend Matt Winkelmann mentioned something on Twitter after the game where he basically said neither of these teams deserve to be taken seriously in any capacity. And really all you had to do was watch this series, and especially from the Phillies' standpoint, because they lost 2 out of 3 to the Mets at home. They could have made up even more ground on the Cubs. The Cubs had a rough weekend series, and The Phillies blew an opportunity to get to within 1.5, but at least they figured out a way on Sunday night to get back to within 2.5 games. But, I mean, you can't really take any of these teams seriously right now. If any of these teams get in, they're going to get their doors blown off in the first round if they're able to even beat the Nationals.
We only have ourselves to blame for watching them and continuing to allow people to take them seriously. I mean, they won tonight and for large stretches looked like a competent baseball team. But I don't necessarily know if I even want to see them. I don't know if I want to see this team captained by Gabe Kapler in the playoffs. I'm terrified of it. I mean, after watching what happened tonight, I'm just like, I don't have any faith in him really anymore as a decision maker. I just have a tough time.
We got to talk about the eighth inning, and the game worked out. The Phillies ended up winning, but it's certainly some of the decisions that he made in this game are going to be, he's going to be asked about. And we're recording this before we see any of the post-game comments. If any of them surface before we finish up here, we'll relay them to you. But
and I'm sure his answer is going to be something impenetrable and unassailable.
He'll have some advanced metric that we don't have access to defend what he's doing.
Yeah, but like it's just... it's all just nonsense now. It's all just, it also seems smarmy and undefendable.
Well, the decision that we're going to talk about here mainly is the decision to pull Zach Eflin out of the game after 7 innings. He'd given up only 3 hits. He gave up a home run in the first inning, and after that was pretty much lights
batter.
Out. Yeah, that's right. To the first. No, wasn't it second? It was Alonso, right? The second batter of the game?
Oh, yes.
Whatever it was.
It was the second.
Doesn't matter. It was really early. Nobody had settled into their seats yet. He only threw 84 pitches in 7 innings because he's gone back to that sinker ball most of the time. He's kind of gone back to what he was doing earlier in the season, where he had a couple complete games early in the season. When his sinker is working, he's very economical, and he was very successful in this game, getting the Mets to put the ball on the ground. And Gabe Kapler took him out for a pinch hitter in the bottom of the seventh inning, and when they could have just bunted Adam Haseley over instead of taking Eflin out of the game.
I mean, and Jay Bruce is who he put in. I don't know why he didn't just send Eflin back out when it was clear all that he was going to do was bunt the guy over.
Yeah.
Which is ended up doing anyway.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It was just a waste of a pinch hitter. Like, yeah, you want to get Jay Bruce a rep or two, but maybe not in a game that means something.
Well, sure. And, you know, when the main job is to get the runner over to third, I mean, give Bruce credit. He did get the runner over to third there. But again, that's a spot where you could have, if the main goal wasn't to get the runner to third. And Gabe Kapler in the eighth inning had an opportunity to bunt runners over into scoring position when you basically just needed to play for one run. And they instead had Brad Miller swing away, and it ended up working out. Both Harper and Hoskins managed to tag up and turn a first and second nobody out into second and third, one out. But again, it's tonight the results were good, but the process did not work out. And when you have a bullpen where Mike Morin is your setup man, a guy that you picked up off the scrap heap, I don't blame Gabe Kapler for having to use Mike Morin there. You know, I mean, he only has the bullets that he has in his bullpen. He's been hamstrung by the guys that he has out there. But knowing that you have Mike Morin as your first guy out of the bullpen tonight, That's the time you try, and you know, I get wanting to get an extra run. I really do. A 2-1 lead in that ballpark is nothing. And so, yes, I understand trying to scratch out another run, but you could have used Eflin there to bunt the runner over to third to get yourself another run in the seventh inning, and then brought Eflin back out for the eighth inning when he's only at 84 pitches instead of going to Mike Morin, who came in and gave up. He was not the guy who actually gave up the tying run. Hector Neris had come in at that point and walked a batter in to bring in the tying run, but it was Mike Morin who got those guys on base. Those were his inherited runners that Neris allowed to score, one of his inherited runners. And so I don't blame Kapler for using Morin there, but I blame Kapler for having to use a relief pitcher there at all, because Eflin should have still been in that baseball game, Liz.
He deserved the chance to keep pitching. He deserved the chance to do
it. He's their best option, too. Yeah, you're right.
You know, I think, I don't know. I can't begin to think, you know, pretend to understand why he did it. I don't know. Maybe I'm just too traditional. Maybe I don't understand. But he deserved the chance to stay out there. And I think a lot of managers would have given him that chance. And he's gonna give us some kind of, well, this many times through the order, or whatever it is, proprietary metric that they've got tells them that they should have done that, or whatever it is. And I just don't agree. I don't think it was the right decision. It bothers me that it was done. It's weird. It's a win, and I'm just, like, still aggressively angry at Gabe Kapler.
We should feel better after wins like this, because it was a big victory for the Phillies. I absolutely had to have this game tonight. But, you know, it's interesting that, you know, we do have a hard time feeling good about these victories, because a lot of the victories the Phillies have had this season have been kind of like this. Something has gone down in the game that drives you crazy. And this is one of those situations. It should not have worked, and the Phillies almost blew the game. But at the end of the day, they managed to figure it out. And credit Hector Neris for coming back out in the ninth inning and getting the Mets down in order 1-2-3 after Scott Kingery hits the bases loaded double to score three runs and give the Phillies the 5-2 victory on Sunday night. I do think it's interesting now with the Phillies 2.5 back of Chicago in the wild card. We've looked at Eflin these last couple of games, Liz, and he's gone back to the sinker. It was a pitch he was using earlier in the season. I think he got away from it, or something happened during the course of the season where I guess the Phillies want everybody to elevate their fastball and throw their fastball up in the zone, because hitters want to lift the ball, and if the ball's down in the zone, that's what hitters are looking for nowadays. And so sinker ball pitchers have kind of gone by the way of extinction. There really aren't any more sinker ball pitchers anymore, and Eflin is trying to go back to being one of them. That's what he's always been. And early in the season, when he was pitching like an all-star, he was having success doing that. In these last two starts, he's looked a lot like that same pitcher earlier in the season. To me, this does not look good for Chris Young. This is not a ringing endorsement for what the Phillies want to do here, because you have a guy in Zach Eflin who is basically saying, this doesn't work for me. What you guys want to do doesn't work for me. I've got to do this my own way, because I'm getting relegated to the bullpen. My career here is on the edge, and so he's gone back to doing what he feels he's most comfortable doing. And it makes me question the Phillies' philosophy with their pitchers right now, Liz. Do they, you know, to understand what these guys are capable of doing and letting them do it? I don't understand why this has to be so hard sometimes.
What this season has made Chris Young look good at all?
No.
Aaron Nola has taken a big step. I wouldn't say a step back, but Aaron Nola has not been himself. Jake Arrieta has continued to suck, and now he's injured. Nick Pivetta, they're hiding him in a hole somewhere. I don't know. I don't know if he'll make it back. I mean, if there's any sign of how they feel about him right now, you have to wait and see if he ends up making it back up for the, you know, they've already done some September call-ups, but I don't know if he was on the list. Was he?
I think Pivetta did come
back. He did come up? All right.
I'm going to double check that, but I'm pretty sure he was one of the people.
I could have missed it, but, you know.
Well, here's something Corey Seidman just reported about Zach Eflin, and maybe this changes things a little bit. Zach Eflin was asked after the game if he thought he had more in the tank after the 84 pitches. He said his arm felt good, but that he's been nursing oblique tightness the last few days, and it crept back up in the middle innings.
Oh, God, so, come on.
What is it with this pitching staff? This is another thing that I think is I'm not understanding is every pitcher is dealing with these oblique things and these elbow. I mean, I have never seen a pitching staff injured like this before. It's crazy. And maybe it doesn't sound like Eflin is going to go on the IL or anything like that, but it wouldn't surprise me at this point.
He has to pitch. They don't have anyone else.
Who?
There's no one. There's literally no one else. So it's, you know, it's him or nothing. And if he's injured and actually has to go on the IL, it says a lot. It says a lot that the season is hanging on the thin spider web line of Zach Eflin's oblique health.
I know, right?
Like, you know, that's where our season is. We're hanging on by nothing. You know, it's over. Disconnect from this team now. Save yourselves. All of you out there, I'm serious. Like, continue to listen to us. We'll make it interesting. We'll fill you in on what's going on.
Yeah, we'll let you know what's going
on
for sure. Yeah.
Don't do this. Life is too short. Life is too short. Enjoy your lives. Be with your children, your families.
There's only a few more days where, you know, you're going to have this kind of sunlight late in the day. You know what I mean?
You're going to make me start weeping. I hate my favorite seasons are spring and summer. I cannot stand it. When the days start getting shorter, it makes me feel claustrophobic. Like, get me off of the planet. I hate it. I hate it. Everyone's like, oh, fall. I love sweaters and boots and pumpkin things. No.
See, that's me.
Cram it. I can't stand it.
What?
No. Fall leads to winter, and winter is the worst. And so anything that resembles winter in the least bit, I want nothing to do with.
I agree winter's the worst, but fall is magical. I love fall. I'm that guy. I love the fall. I don't do the pumpkin spice latte stuff, but and I don't do everything pumpkin. I do love pumpkin pie and stuff, but yeah, it's a little bit too much sometimes. But no, I'm ready for the fall. I'm ready for that kind of weather for sure, but I get it, you know, because it is a reminder that winter is around the corner. But the good news is that the winter will end the Phillies season this year. So the way things are looking with this frustrating season that we have in front of us here.
I thought last year was the most that I could look forward to Eagles. I thought last year was the most I could look forward to it. I was wrong. I was sitting on a Sunday. I'm just like, oh God, the Phillies aren't on until 7. I'm just like, do the Eagles somehow have a game at that time? Is there an excuse for me to not watch them?
So you're not into leaf peeping, Liz? You're not.
I live in Ohio. There isn't a lot of great foliage out here.
No leaf peeping there. No, I guess not.
No.
By the way, quickly about Nick Pivetta, this is why I thought Pivetta had... He was not one of the call-ups today, but Klentak did say earlier today, and this is what I read that made me think Pivetta was one of the guys. Klentak said that Pivetta, Nick Williams, Michael Franco, and utility player Jose Perella are likely to join the Phillies this week in Cincinnati. So that's why they weren't called up. They apparently will be added to the roster at some point. Why they weren't added today, I don't understand why there's a wait to do it in Cincinnati, but I guess there is for some reason. So those guys will likely join the team here pretty soon. But going back to Zach Eflin, if the oblique tightness is an issue and they lose him, they're done, Liz. They don't have a chance, because part of what this team really hurt them this year is obviously Pivetta might have been the worst thing to happen to this team this year. His failure to be anything.
Oh,
I'm dead serious.
God.
I'm not going to pin it all on him, but so much was riding on him emerging as a quality starting pitcher. Right, not sucking exactly.
Like really, being a quality starting pitcher is not even the lowest bar. That's a middle bar. Just not sucking as much as he did. Really, it's not a high bar to clear, and yet somehow here we are again.
And Velasquez this year is what Velasquez has always been, and I didn't have really high expectations for him. But I, you know, with Arrieta and Pivetta not giving you that 2-3 in the rotation that you were hoping for, the Phillies had all those bullpen injuries this season, and you know, given all the injuries the Phillies have had with the bullpen, and now it looks like Sir Anthony Dominguez, there's a possibility he might need Tommy John surgery and miss all of next year.
Why didn't he just get it months ago?
Dr. James Andrews told him that surgery wasn't necessary at this time. They wanted to try and treat it without surgery. And I mean, that's the guy, you know, that's the guy to listen to, you know. So I guess I understand in that particular case why you would wait. If Dr. Andrews is saying you don't need the surgery right now, let's try these other methods, then great. You know, because anytime you get surgery, and it's not a guarantee you're going to come back from Tommy John surgery. It's more likely that if it is treatable by not having to have your arm opened up, then go for it. But in this case, it looks as though maybe that was not a bad diagnosis, but maybe an overly optimistic diagnosis, because he could be out for all of next year. And then you're looking at this team this year and all of the relievers and all of the starters. Not only did the guys that we went into the season thinking were going to be parts of the bullpen and the starting rotation, most of them came up small, but the depth at AAA, none of them worked out. There was not if you can think of a young player, a young pitcher who came up this year to help this team in any meaningful way, Liz, then tell me, because I can't think of a single relief pitcher or starting pitcher that came up from AAA when things were going bad and actually helped.
I got nothing.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a huge indictment on this team's development of young players. That none of the AAA starters, Cole Irvin, Ranger Suarez, Drew Anderson, J.D. Hammer, Edgar Garcia, all of these guys, none of them helped.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, relief pitching has been a problem for every team. Yeah, relief pitching has been terrible across the board on almost every team in baseball this season. And so I don't know what it is or why, but it's not just the Phillies, but also all the dudes you just named are terrible. They're all real, real bad. And there's really no excuse for none of them working out. I don't understand.
I mean, that's a big problem. That's a big problem for this team, is that there is no depth in AAA. And that was one of the things that we thought, hey, they've got a lot of AAA arms down there that, you know, if Pivetta gets hurt or if Eflin gets hurt, Arrieta has to miss a few starts. You got Cole Irvin down there. You've got Ranger Suarez.
Were we ever so naive?
We were so naive. Remember my Trust the Prospects t-shirts, Liz?
Of course I do.
That now is old takes exposed. I mean, I feel ridiculous when I see it sitting in my dresser drawer. Every now and then I come across it. I'm like, oh, John, that was so cute of you. I mean,
so
innocent.
You don't know until they hit the majors. You never know how they're going to do. You just sort of have to put your lot in with them or against them. There really isn't another position, you know?
Yeah.
You can, I mean, and a lot of us were like, let's wait and see what happens. But, you know, there were reasons to be excited. You know, it's...
Yep.
Yeah,
I have to
a depressing thing to talk about.
Well, one of the prospects has done well this year, and that's Kingery. He has been a tremendous help this season, and I'm excited for him to be the starting second baseman next year. But he's done a very good job playing all over the field. Really, his defense has not been a problem.
No.
He's been not spectacular, but solid everywhere, which is great. And he had the big hit. He had the big three-run double in the game here on Sunday night. And we're talking, I can hear the tone of our voices makes it sound as though the Phillies lost this game, but they did win on Sunday night, but did lose two out of three to the Mets and did not look good at all doing
and they
it.
Really one need, last... They really needed at least two of those games.
They did.
And they did not
you're right.
get them.
No. And the ballpark sounded like, man, it sounded like Citi Field South.
Yeah.
There were a ton of Mets fans in Philly this weekend.
Yeah, in Philly's fans in Citizens Bank Park were booing them. I'm just like, you know what would have been better? Telling your friends to get their butts down there.
That's right.
If there are enough of them there, like, I mean, that's how it goes. And, you know, they're going to boo the opposing team's fans and the opposing team's fans are going to be loud. That's how it goes. But, yeah. Like, you know, I don't want to hear any crap from any columnists tomorrow about it. There should be nothing about it at all.
Yeah, I doubt any columnist is well, you
I
know
was
what?
Just gonna
I
say
that,
did
but
you just hear what
I know
you said? We also just witnessed a national columnist, you know, a national editorial idiot, you know, call out someone who called him a metaphorical bedbug in quote unquote
oh, yeah.
the paper of record. So
yeah,
no one
yeah,
is
yeah.
above or below anything anymore.
No, not at all. One last thing before we hit the break here with the bullpen, Liz. I was thinking about this, and you know, thinking about all the players that they lost in the bullpen this year. Is there any way the Phillies could have been prepared for this? You know, was there any way to avoid having to use guys like Mike Morin and Blake Parker and Jared Hughes in high leverage situations, or does you know? I guess my question is: Is there anything that Klentak could have done to make make this more tolerable, to ease the blow of all of these different relief pitchers who went out? Because it's a crushing number of relief pitchers of players all at one position to lose in one season.
I don't know if there's anything he could have done. I mean, sign better players, spend more money to sign better players,
or like at the trade deadline.
Yeah, I mean, maybe something like that. I mean, there were things they could have done, you know, but also some of the reason that they've sucked is the way they've been used by Gabe Kapler. So
I'm looking up Craig Kimbrell's.
I was thinking that too, and I was about to look. I'm like, how has he been lately? If they gave him more
Craig
of a
Kimbrell
running
has,
start.
He has a 4.42 ERA in 16 games for the Cubs,
okay.
13 saves. So he's got a 25-10 strikeout to walk ratio in 18 and a third innings. So
not
I mean,
perfect,
it's
not great,
not great.
But
yeah,
he's Craig Kimbrell, and he's gotten a bunch of saves.
I will say this: I'm gonna also kind of look over his first three appearances were brutal. Over his last 17 appearances, he has a 2.30
there
ERA.
There we are.
His opponents are hitting 193 against him.
Mm-hmm.
In his last 15 and two-thirds innings, he has 22 strikeouts in 15 and two-thirds innings and only 8 walks. He's given up 4 runs in his last 17 games. So it looks like he had a rough go of it at the start and now doing well.
Yeah, that is super great to hear.
I don't think you mean that. I don't think you mean
How
that.
How could you tell?
Well, we're going to take a step away and take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about Corey Dickerson because he's an interesting guy, and he's really been a big addition in the month that he's been here. Can he be a Philly after 2019? We'll talk about that next up here on Hittin' Season. And we're back on Hittin' Season. John Stolness along with Liz Rocher here on Hittin' Season episode number 315. So the Phillies won on Sunday night 5-2. They salvaged the final game of the three-game series. They're 2.5 games back of the Cubs in the wild card. And one of the guys that has really helped keep the offense afloat, as a lot of guys are struggling during Rhys Hoskins' awful slump in August, Corey Dickerson. That is one trade that Matt Klentak got absolutely right. Dickerson has been a godsend since he came to Philadelphia, Liz. Coming into Sunday night, he was hitting .300 as a Philly. Only a .312 on base. The guy doesn't walk, but you know what? He swings the bat looking to hit the ball hard someplace, and he does it. He has a .578 slugging percentage coming into Sunday, and that only went up after he had another couple RBIs here in the game on Sunday night. 5 home runs since joining the Phillies coming into Sunday. 25 RBIs in 24 games as a Philly, and he's hit 364 in 33 at-bats with runners in scoring position, Liz. He has been a terrific bat. He's very different from what most of the other Phillies hitters are. He's not a patient guy at the plate. When he's ahead in the count, he's looking to find a pitch to hit someplace hard, which is something I appreciate. You need some of those guys in a lineup with guys who are looking to see as many pitches as possible, like Rhys Hoskins, like Bryce Harper, some of those guys who are willing to let a 3-1 fastball go down the middle to try and then foul off a bunch of 3-2 pitches. But Corey Dickerson's not like that, and he's been incredibly productive. You don't blow things up based on 1 month of a guy doing really well, but what are your thoughts on Corey Dickerson since he joined the Phillies and the possibility of keeping him around long-term? He's a free agent at the end of the year. Is there any way the Phillies can figure out a way to keep him?
I mean, I've been incredibly pleasantly surprised. I figured that this would be, I mean, the history of Matt Klentak and these types of trades, at least in recent memory, is very bad. And so I was waiting for a while for this to turn into something terrible, but I've been pleasantly surprised by him. That being said, if they had control of him for another year, I'd say sure, keep him and flip him in the offseason to someone who needs him, but he's been doing really well. I think he'll get an offer from someone else who's willing to pay more than the Phillies are, or the Phillies should, considering that they have, where are they putting him?
Well, that's
like, that's
question.
The thing. If they sign him, it would only be, I don't even know. Like, he traded for Jay Bruce. He wants Jay Bruce. There's more control of Jay Bruce. He wants Andrew McCutchen. He's here for another 2 years. And, of course, it's Andrew McCutchen. And so there's nowhere to put him. There's just nowhere to put him. And that's sad, but that's the way it goes. Like, the Phillies are committed to the guys that they're committed to. They've stumbled on a great player, which is wonderful. It's so rare that these things work out for the Phillies. And I think we should all enjoy that for what it is and see if, you know, he can ignite some magic somewhere, somehow, become a legend in, you know, in just a little, just a short little bit of time we have left with him. Beyond that, like, I just don't see a point to it.
Well, it's a good point you make, because where is he going to play? And that's the thing, is if he could play a little center field, if he could fake center field, or if Harper could fake center field, or McCutchen on his recovered ACL could play center field, then it's a no-brainer.
I don't like any of those options.
But no, that really hurts your defense. And one of the aspects of the Phillies this year that has been much improved is the defense. They have, after being an utter disaster, maybe the worst defensive fielding team I have ever seen in 2018. The Phillies have been very solid. They don't make a ton of spectacular plays in the field, but this year it seems as though the Phillies have made all of the routine plays and a few extra plays that, you know, do go a little bit above and beyond the call. But with Corey Dickerson out in left field, he's a very good defender in the corner outfield. He's a very good defender out there. I think he won the Gold Glove last year as a corner outfielder. But moving him to center field, I think, would be an impossibility. And you certainly don't want Bryce Harper out there. Bryce Harper this year is having an outstanding defensive season in right field. He's very comfortable there. You're not going to be able... The Pittsburgh Pirates moved McCutchen out of center field when he was 2 years younger than he is now and healthy, because he couldn't cut it out there. So McCutchen is not really an option in center field. You're going to need Adam Haseley probably in center. And I heard Jim Salisbury on NBC Sports Philadelphia podcast at the Yard on, I think it was Friday it came out. He poo-pooed the idea of Haseley being a regular center fielder with this team, not thinking he was a good enough defensive center fielder. I think Haseley would be fine out there if you pairing him up with Roman Quinn. There's, of course, the situation with Odubel Herrera. I don't think Herrera is coming back. I think the Phillies will try to offload him, and if they can't, they'll just let him go. But the outfield situation is a very unique one for the Phillies next year, and I think you're right, Liz. They've committed to McCutchen, and they've committed to Harper. It kind of stinks that they may have found a better player than McCutchen and Corey Dickerson.
Or Bruce.
But, you know, and Jay Bruce, that's right. Damn it, I keep forgetting about Jay Bruce because he's been gone for the last couple of months, but he is under contract for next year. You're right. I totally forgot.
I think Dickerson's better. I think that...
Way better.
I really think he is, but here's the thing. They would have to sign Dickerson and flip Bruce. That's just, I mean, which is fine, but I also don't see them going to that much trouble. I just, for some reason, I feel like they're just going to stick with the guy they have control with because it's easier than signing a new guy and making another trade.
Well, in this
particular case,
which is lame.
I think they should keep Dickerson if they can. But, I mean, Jay Bruce was Matt Klentak's white whale. He wanted him.
Yeah, he's wanted him for a while.
Embarrassingly no, you're right. So.
Yeah, no, you're right. And here's the deal. It's going to come down to money, too, because we already Jay Bruce is under contract for next year. Corey Dickerson, somebody's going to pay him to start for them.
I hope so.
You can't bring Corey Dickerson as a sub. Bringing Corey Dickerson back as a sub, a part-time player with McCutchen, is a non-starter.
Oh, no.
He has hit well enough this year that somebody is going to give him a 2 or a 3 year deal at like $16-17 million a season.
As they should. And the Philly, he's worth it.
Yeah, he is. He is worth it. That's what he's shown. And we'll see what he does in September. If he has a bigger month in September or as big a month in September, he's gonna maybe even make a little bit more than that. Jay Bruce can be just a bench player because he is limited in what he can do. He doesn't hit left-handers. He doesn't play defense very well. He's oft injured. So you can justify Bruce at his salary as a bench player. There's no way you can justify Corey Dickerson as a bench player, and he's not going to want to take a job where he's a bench player.
No, not at all.
So what do you do for center field next year? I mean, obviously, we're going to talk a lot about the 2020 season once we get to the offseason, but since we're kind of here, you know, what do they do? Do they just bring Haseley back? Is there a chance Odubel comes back, or is he done?
I don't know. I don't think they can let him go. I think they would have to trade him. There's no, there's really no choice. They can't just release him, not when he's under contract. I think that would be grounds for a grievance, and he would win most likely, because there's no baseball reason they're letting him go. And so I think there's a chance. I really do. I don't like it. I think it sucks, and I'm not going to look forward to hearing the pathetic excuses the Phillies give. But they don't really have another option. I'd say keep him on the bench and keep him out of everyone's way, but. And that's only if they can't trade him, which I think they should try and trade him. See if anybody else wants him, put him as a throw-in for another trade. It doesn't matter. But if they can't do that, there's a chance he comes back. I don't like it, and I don't want to see him there. But I see it as solving a problem for the Phillies because they have no idea what they're going to do, I don't think. I have no idea what they're going to do.
I'm looking at Herrera's numbers. I mean, when he signed that contract, we thought, oh, that's a friendly contract. If the Phillies ever decided they wanted to trade him, they could trade him because it's not that expensive. But given everything that's happened, he's due to make $7.35 million next year, and in 2021, $10.35 million. And then there are team options and buyouts for 2022 and 2023. So basically, a team would only be on the hook for, you know, the next two seasons. And if the Phillies were going to trade him, my guess is they would have to eat a lot of that
money.
And
I think they would willingly do it. I think they would to do it. I think that's going to be the first thing they do.
I'm looking at his numbers combined the last 2 years. You could argue there's a baseball reason to let him go.
He's
he was
good.
He was a negative 0.5 WAR WAR player, according to Baseball Reference this year. Over the last 2 years, hit .249, .306, .405.
And if you take out that one hot month, it's abysmal.
Oh, yeah. It really is. You're right, because it was in May that he went nuts, right?
Beginning of the season through sometime in May, I think, or something
right.
like that.
Right. So from June on, it was pretty awful. Let me look at that. So they're gonna have a hard time trading this player who has been basically terrible for a full calendar year of baseball, who's also due to make $17.5 million over the next two seasons. It was in April. He had .343, .400, .505.
Yeah, remember that.
And then in May he was still pretty good. He had an .819 OPS, and then after that, 742 OPS, 739 OPS, August 576 OPS, September 480 OPS in September. I mean, that's, whew, man, oh man, I had it forgotten. And I didn't expect to talk a lot about Odubel Herrera on the podcast tonight, but.
Yeah, I mean, those numbers they'll set your hair back a little bit when you remember them, because we loved him a lot. And he was great, and we defended him a whole lot through the 2018 season because of that one hot month. And through the end of it, we all just stopped talking about it because he was so bad.
It really is hard to believe how bad he was.
So bad. Like, yeah. The player that he was is still in there. I don't know if he's ever coming back out, though.
Yeah, especially in light of missing a whole season now. And, you know, maybe he has to, maybe this gets his head on right. Because, and there were, frankly, before the domestic violence stuff came down, you know, there were conversations within the Phillies organization about keeping him just because of how aloof he was, and you know, all the different stuff, and the you know, the story by Megan Montemuro a couple of years ago about how team officials had to always try and wrangle him to team meetings and get him to be on time and all that kind of stuff. There were attitude issues with him, you know, going into last year when he came into spring training out of shape, and Gabe Kapler had to talk to him about that. So there's a lot going on there with Odubel Herrera that will be fascinating to see what happens with him this offseason and what they do with center field, because if it's not Odubel, it's probably some combination of Haseley and Quinn, because I don't, like I said, none of the guys that they have none of the veterans they have can hack it.
They have to keep Quinn. He's out of options.
They have to keep Quinn. And I like Haseley. I know that, I think he's had his the typical rookie year struggles. He's not going to be a star player, but I don't know what it is about him. I kind of like him. I'm interested to see more of him. I think he's got something. I think he can be a productive player, but I don't know if he's a starter in the league.
And I have no feelings on him at all. I would like to see him succeed, but I would not be surprised if he doesn't.
I wanted to get your thoughts on this, Liz. What do you remember about the 1979 season?
I remember negative things. I was not born.
No, and I was just 3 years old, I think, during the 1979 season. Yeah, so, I mean, it's not exactly in the top of my memory banks as well. And most of the people listening to this podcast probably do not remember the 1979 Phillies. But I've been, you know, kind of, and this was mentioned a little bit at the beginning of the season, because when the Phillies signed Bryce Harper to that big contract, it reminded people a lot of the 1979 offseason when the Phillies went out and signed Pete Rose to what was at that point the richest contract in baseball history. Do you remember how much that contract was, Liz?
I don't. Tell me. It'll be an amusing number, I bet.
A four-year, $3.24 million contract. He was making $800,000 a
year. Wow.
And that was the richest contract in baseball in 1979 that the Phillies gave Pete Rose. So, he was brought on, obviously, to help a team get over the hump that had won three straight division titles. Bryce Harper, obviously, signed by the Phillies this offseason after 7 years of rebuilding and losing. Very different situations. Rose was going to a team that was already really well established, had a great offense, had an ace starter in Carlton, and had some other pitchers that looked like they were on the rise. There was Larry Christensen, Dick Ruthven, some other guys that were looking to be, you know, top shelf starters, good number two, number three starters. And a lot of people were asking, you know, is this going to be a season? This could be a season like 1979, because that team won three straight division titles and they looked like they were perfectly well positioned to win a fourth with bringing Pete Rose on board. And they traded for Manny Trio. I mean, was it Manny Trio? Yeah, they traded for Manny Trio that offseason. But it's really amazing when you kind of, and I'm going to write about this for The Good Fight, should be up on Monday. It's really interesting when you look at the comparisons with these two teams. 40 years ago, this team 40 years ago from 1979 had the same exact things going on as this 2019 team. You had the big free agent signing, which didn't end up actually helping you do what you needed to do. And listen, there's still a month left in the season. Maybe Bryce Harper does help this team get to the playoffs. I'm very skeptical and dubious, as I know you are as well. You had massive injuries in that 1979 team. Luzinski got hurt, Boa got hurt, Manny Trio got hurt. They lost Larry Christensen and Dick Ruthven for big parts of the season. They had a ton of players who underachieved. Luzinski hit 18 home runs that season. He was a perennial 30 home run guy, and those 18 homers were like second on the team that year. There were only four guys with an OPS plus over 100: Schmidt, Rose, Boone, and Luzinski. And a couple of those guys were just barely over. Steve Carlton had a less than stellar season for him. He had like a 2.5 win season for the Phillies that year. And then none of the other pitchers were anywhere close to them. So you had a really brutal mix of underachieving. You had a lot of injuries like the Phillies, but nothing like the 2019 Phillies have had. And it's just kind of ironic that you have these parallels with the big free agent signing of Pete Rose and the big free agent signing of Bryce Harper, all these expectations coming into the season. And that 1979 team finished in fourth place in the National League East, which is ironically where this Phillies team very well could end up by the end of 2019. What do you think about that?
If it means next year we'll win the World Series, I'm on board.
There you go. Because that's right. In 1980, they ended up winning the World Series. It was one of those one-year blips. And it really, even the 79 Phillies, how their season started mirrored how this Philly season started. But on May 17th, the 79 Phillies were 24-10, and they led the National League East by 3.5 games. Isn't that the exact maximum lead this team has had this year in May? It was in late May they got to 11 games over 500. I think they were... It was at least 3 games. I think they had a 3.5-game lead, and that was their largest lead so far this year.
I think so.
And it was like right around the same time, late May, the 79 team collapsed. They went into a 5-13 tailspin that dropped them all the way down to 4th place for a game, but they were in 3rd place for most of the season.
Sounds familiar.
Before falling down. It's exactly the same. It's crazy how history is repeating itself 40 years later.
Again, if this means the 2020 Phillies will be World Series champions, it will have made this worth it.
Amen.
Even if, you know what, if it doesn't come for another year or so, even after that, it would have made this worth it. But my God. My God. I'm just like, how is there still a month left in this season? There's still a month left.
It does feel like this season has been going for a very, very long time.
Mm-hmm.
It really, really does. When we come back, hopefully this podcast doesn't feel like it's been going on for a really, really long time, but I wouldn't blame you if it has. But we're going to look ahead at the September schedule, and we're going to try and figure out how many more games this team is going to win. What number do they finish up with? Do they surpass last year's totals? We'll talk about that next here on Hittin' Season. And we're back on Hittin' Season. So, Liz, as we finish up episode 315 here, let's take a look ahead. Now that we are just getting into the month of September, the last month of the season, let's take a look at what the Phillies have in front of them here. And it is pretty damn ugly. They go to Cincinnati for a 4-game series starting on Labor Day. Really crazy. They have such a tight turnaround here. This Sunday night game ending, luckily it didn't go to extra innings, but ending around 10 o'clock Eastern time. They got to get on a flight and get to Cincinnati tonight. They're probably not going to get into Cincinnati till like 2 or 3 in the morning. So that doesn't bode well for their Monday afternoon game against the Reds in Cincinnati. And they play 4 games there this week. Are you, as an Ohio resident, are you going to be attending any of these games this week?
We have. We were thinking about going to tomorrow's game. But those 6:40 start times make it a little tough to get there and see most of the game.
Yeah.
And they have a 12:35 start on Thursday. So
right. Thanks
a lot. So the answer is probably not.
Oh, no.
I know.
Well,
I went to three of the 4 games last year, which coincidentally was the start of the Phillies. It was beginning of August. It was the start of their enormous tailspin.
Oh, right.
We got there. We got stuck in traffic and got there just as they were hitting that barrage of home runs in the first game. And they didn't hit another one for like the rest of the series. We went to all 4 games, I think.
That's right. I remember that now. I remember because we talked about that on the podcast last year, how brutal that series was in Cincinnati. And you, I remember you saying you were there for all those games. Yikes.
I saw, theoretically, the end of the 2018 Phillies.
Yes, you did. You saw the digging of the grave. That was good. You didn't, I mean, we all saw the dirt being thrown on them as the season went on, but you got to see the grave being dug. So what a great series last year, and hopefully things will be better this year, but I'm not counting on it. Cincinnati has struggled. They are not a very good baseball team, but they do have some good pitching. They've played better than their record would indicate, and 4 games on the road, especially on a quick turnaround after a Sunday night game, is not enviable for the Phillies. So they go to Cincinnati for 4 games. Then they go to New York to play the Mets for another 3. They come home for a 4-game series against the Atlanta Braves. Then they get 2 games against the Red Sox at home. Then they go back to Atlanta. They go to Cleveland for a 3-game series against the Indians, who are in a dogfight with the Minnesota Twins for the American League Central. Then they go to Washington for a 5-game series against the Nationals at the end of September before finishing. Oh my gosh, this is crazy. And then they finish off with a 3-game home series against Miami.
Well,
so
thank God.
after the 4 games against Cincinnati, they play 20 games in a row against teams with a winning record before the final series against Miami. So we are looking at, let's see, 27 games left in the season here, Liz. How many of these games do you think they win out of these 27 games?
I'm going to say out of 27 games, maybe. I feel like they could go 500, maybe. Maybe 13.
Okay.
Just under.
So like 13 and 14, something like that, or 14
and
13? Yeah,
something like that. I have no faith that they could do better than that. I don't believe they would do better. I actually think they probably will do worse.
Yeah, I was thinking about 12 and 15 is what I was thinking coming down the stretch here.
We believe in the Phillies, guys.
Well, it's you know, what are you going to do?
I mean,
yeah, they've given nobody any reason to believe that they can go on a run here. I mean, the pitching just tells you everything you need to know. They can't go on a run, and when you're playing 20 in a row against winning opponents, and most of these games are on the road after tonight. The Phillies have 6, 7, 8, 9 home games left. So only 9 of the final 27 games are at home. They play 4, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18 road games in their final 27. So not only are you playing all these winning teams, you're playing them all on the road during this month of September with a pitching staff that's crumbling around you. So I think 12 wins might even be optimistic. 12 and 15 would be 3 games under 500, and that would give the Phillies a finish of 82 wins on the season. If they go 15 and 14, Liz, then that means they finish with 85 wins on the season. So I got to say, if they win 15 games in this 27 game stretch, that's probably about as good as you could expect them to do, wouldn't you think?
I agree. I don't think that. I mean, again, yeah. I don't think they can win more. If they win that many games to end the season, I mean, we will have like a tone of voice that will sound slightly joyous. Like it's than any of us really expect them to do. So.
Yep. Yeah. And I wonder how the Chicago Cubs. Well, I mean, the Cubs are going to finish up. Everybody's finishing up with teams in their division. You have a couple of interleague series thrown in here for the most part, but the Cubs are going to play the Cardinals a bunch, and they're going to play the Brewers a bunch, and they're going to beat up on each other. So, you know, there's a good chance that the Cubs might not run away with things either here. But again, we go back to what we said at the beginning of the podcast. Do the Phillies, or really any of these National League teams fighting for the second wild card, give you any reason to take them seriously here? As the season winds down, which of these three teams do you think, the Cubs, the Phillies, or the Mets, are most likely to pull away? It's the Cubs, right?
I think so. I mean, honestly, my first answer is the Mets, but I don't know why.
Interesting.
I don't know why.
Well, the pitching staff. The pitching
well,
staff.
Well, yeah, the pitching staff the best and Pete Alonso. Like the Cub.
Oh man, he's amazing.
He is. He's great. And like the Mets have put it together a couple of times this season. The Cubs have had like startling offensive issues, and they cannot play in front of their own fans. They can't. I think they have a terrible home record, if I remember.
The Mets do, yeah.
The Cubs do, I believe.
Oh, the Cubs. No, the Cubs have a road record. A terrible road record.
I'm getting that mixed up.
Yeah.
But they can't. They're just. They've had a lot of problems this season. They could put it together. I just don't know if they will. I feel like the Mets. With, you know, their corny dad joke energy on every single one of them. I feel like they have a better chance of stunning everybody and inserting themselves into the conversation in a way that no one wants. And you know what? If I have to root for any team in the playoffs this season, it might be, you know, if besides the Dodgers, because sure, why not? It might be the Mets because no one wants them there. No one wants the Mets there. Their own fans barely want them there. And
I know,
so,
right?
I mean, it's like us. We barely want the Phillies there. We don't want to see them be embarrassed. But, you know, if the Mets can do it, Godspeed, Mets.
I'm looking at the Cubs schedule here as they finish up. They have to host the Seattle Mariners for a 2-game series on Monday and Tuesday. Then they go to Milwaukee for 4. They go to San Diego to play the Padres for 4. Then they get 3 against Pittsburgh. I mean, so you got Padres and Pittsburgh right there. If it's the Phillies, you can't guarantee a win in any of those games, but a good team like the Cubs probably takes care of business against the Padres and the Pirates. And they got a 3-game homer against the Reds. Again, another not a good team. 4 games at home against the Cardinals, and then they finish up the season with 3 on the road in Pittsburgh and 3 in St. Louis. So they have 6 games against the Pirates and 4 games against the Padres. That's
unfair.
What is that? That's 10 games where, and Seattle at home. So that's a very easy schedule for the Cubs coming down the stretch. I imagine the Mets are going to have a similar schedule to the Phillies, although I don't think they have a couple of games against the Yankees here to finish up. I'm pulling up their schedule as we chat here. Here we go. So the Mets coming down the stretch, they have to take on the Nationals in Washington for three games, and they host the Phillies for three. They go to Arizona for a four-game series against the Diamondbacks. Then they have they host the Diamondbacks for a four-game series. Then they host the Dodgers for a three-game series. So that's not easy. Then they go to Colorado for three, go to Cincinnati for three, host Miami for four, host Atlanta for three. Not as tough as the Phillies, but they've got a couple games in there where, you know, they have the Dodgers at home. At least they get the Dodgers at home, but L.A. is just a machine. So, I don't know. I think the Phillies for sure have the hardest schedule out of all three of those teams at this point.
I would agree. Yeah, I mean, I'd be more excited about, you know, the Cubs or the Mets or the Phillies making it if I thought any of them had a chance to beat any of the other teams in front of them. They just don't. They don't have a chance. Yeah. So.
Yeah. And so the month of September, essentially, Liz, is trying to enjoy the month of September and seeing if they can get there. Because once they get there, we know it's going to be over soon. So the journey this year is trying to get in.
Yeah. It's just... Yeah. Enjoy life, everyone. Don't feel tethered to the Phillies. Don't feel like they dictate the things that you do. I don't know if they have a ballpark pass, but if you have it, look at it and consider what your evening really, what we'd rather do with your evening.
Yeah, no, for sure. And, you know, if you're going down to the ball yard, hey, the ball yard's a nice place to be. Even when you're watching a losing team, I like going to the ballpark, just catching a game. But, yeah, if you gotta, don't turn your life around for this baseball team at the moment until they show you a little something. And you know they've run their winning streak right now to one in a row, which is noble of them. We'll see if they can get it to two in a row. They have yet to have a five-game winning streak this season, and I don't think it's coming here in the month of September.
No.
But I hate being this negative about the team, especially after a win. But this is just kind of
it's a 162 game season. It's just
yeah, that's right.
We're human.
It is what it is, man. Yep, no doubt. All right, Liz, any final thoughts before we wrap up episode 315?
I just want the Phillies to be better than they were this weekend. They lost 2-3 to the Mets. I hate it so much. Be better, Phillies.
Please.
Don't make me regret spending so much time on you.
I mentioned this on the last podcast. It was if you are a devoted Phillies fan and you've watched, say, like half the games this year, you probably haven't watched them all start to finish. But if you just were using round numbers and you say the average baseball game is 3 hours long, you've essentially watched 240 hours of baseball this summer, devoted, invested 240 hours of your life to this team. So it's understandable why people have that emotional investment in this baseball team this year. And if you've decided that you're going to take a little Philly siesta, keep on coming back to Hittin' Season and Continued Success, which is the show that Liz does with Justin every week, where they're breaking down this team, as well as the 2009 Phillies. And maybe, you know, we can reminisce on the 2009 Phils a little bit this final month of the season as Liz and Justin chronicle that playoff run in September and October of that year. And don't forget to subscribe to the Good Fight podcast feed, everybody, so that you get Continued Success and The Dirty Inning and both episodes of Hittin' Season every week when they are up and loaded for you. That'll do it for episode number 315. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We'll talk to you all next time right here on Hittin' Season.